Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Why are some writers so dangerous? Is it their physical beauty? No. Politics is Hollywood for ugly people. And writers who write politics aren't known for their beauty. But you know what makes them dangerous? The good ones, at least, remember things. That's what makes them dangerous. Especially in Chicago. Especially with the main event taking place now. In the center ring, now. The race for mayor of Chicago. And even so, many are trying so damn hard not to remember. Not to remember what happened. Not to remember what the past tells us about this mayoral campaign. But if you can remember, maybe you can trace the fall of Chicago as if it were an angry red line drawn on a map. And you realize that, as all the schemers tell you, memory isn't important. But it is important. Chicago Mayor Fallas Maximus was there at that memorial rally for Harold Washington at the University of Illinois, Chicago, Chicago's Circle Campus, just after Washington had died. And that was 34 years ago, when the cancel culture was born. At least she told me she was there. She could have been lying, but I don't think so. And our guest today, Chicago mayoral candidate and alderman, 6th Ward Alderman Roderick Sawyer, was there. He was there with his father then, Alderman Eugene Sawyer, soon to be Mayor Gene Sawyer, back in the day when Gene Sawyer was a college student, long before that, when he was at a black fraternity, serving as a bodyguard for the late Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. And I was there 34 years ago at Chicago Circle, at the pavilion, to see how Gene Sawyer was treated. And you know who else was there? The Democratic machine cold holder for Machine Southside Alderman Claude W. Holman was there. Holman was a notorious alderman, and his coat holder, a young man at his elbow, was Tim Evans, who became his 4th Ward Alderman Tim Evans, his successor, and later, well, moved on to other things. At that time, after Harold Washington had died, the left in Chicago wanted to make Tim Evans the mayor. But they chose a funny way of accomplishing this. They painted Alderman Eugene Sawyer, as a race traitor, as an Uncle Tom. In that rally, things were said that couldn't be unsaid. It was so bad that Sun-Times columnist Vernon Jarrett was compelled and forced by his newspaper, the Sun-Times, to apologize after he compared Gene Sawyer to African militiamen, and I quote, killing black babies. That was outrageous. It was wrong. It didn't bother Evans and the left, though. It was politics to them. They destroyed Gene Sawyer by saying he wasn't black enough, and it was revolting. Because I knew what Gene Sawyer did in college. I knew that he had protected Dr. Martin Luther King. He was no Uncle Tom, but they called him that. And I promised myself, standing there, listening to Gus Savage scream, to Vernon Jarrett scream, listening to Lou Palmer weep, I promised myself I would never forget it. Not everyone was upset. You know, somebody was happy. Rich Daley was happy. With black politics tearing itself apart, Richard M. Daley moved in, offering to calm the tensions. And the media played ball and thanked him again. And so he was made boss of Chicago. And it was Daley who took Tim Evans by the hand and helped make him the chief judge of Cook County. And now Tim is in charge of all the violent that are let out on low or no bond and electronic monitoring, arrested for violent crimes, and then put out and into those same black neighborhoods to commit unspeakable violence against those same black people. And the left doesn't want to talk about that either. There's no way that angry white leftists want to talk about how they're hurting black people. So yeah, and I don't forget. I remember. I will tell you a secret, though. In Alderman Roderick Sawyer's desk, where he's planning his Chicago mayoral campaign, he's got a $20 bill with my signature on it. Why is my signature on that 20 in Alderman Roderick Sawyer's desk? I guess you'll have to listen to the Chicago Way podcast. And co-host Jeff Carlin is here as always, executive producer, WGN, future physics teacher, lover of cats, master of pies, and of sound. And I'm John Cass, husband, father, editor-in-chief of your favorite website for common sense, johncassnews.com. And where are you? It's just some people barely remember what it was done to Rod Sawyer's father and to the city of Chicago. When the dailies marched in, let in, cemented there by all the angry talk of the left about who was black and who wasn't. Oh yeah. You should remember, people. It's your city. The city of Chicago, when those ugly, angry voices could destroy a man who loved his family and his church and his neighborhood and the city. Where are you? You're with Jeff Carlin and Rod Sawyer and me on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
The Chicago Way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
So our guest, as promised, is Rod Sawyer, alderman of the 6th Ward, running for mayor of Chicago. And I'd just like to offer to Roderick Sawyer, Alderman Sawyer of the 6th Ward, and anybody else who's running for mayor, you're all welcome to write for John Cass News as long as you're not attacking anyone. You can criticize them, but just don't get, you know, don't get all lefty Marxist Jacobin on them. And you're welcome to write. I'd like to read what Rod Sawyer has in mind for the city. But right now he's on the podcast. So, Rod, what do you have in mind for the city of Chicago?
Well, first of all, good morning to you, John, and thank you for having me on the show.
Good morning, sir.
My goals are laudable, but I think they're very direct, and I think they can be understood by everyone. My goal is to reset what's going on in Chicago as far as the administration and the way we do business, because it's archaic, it makes no sense, and it really does not drill down to the everyday citizen of Chicago. We're based on a system, basically, let's be honest, we're based on a patronage system with no patronage. It's a connected system that does not have the tools necessary to get things done. And it frustrates a lot of aldermen. That's why you probably see the mass exodus of people leaving, because the job is no longer fulfilling. And that's a big problem. And when I talk about this, we need to reset how government operates. You know, we need to talk about why it takes a year to get a tree trimmed. We need to talk about why 311 constantly is referring people back to the automatic offices. That should not be the case. 311 is the place where you're supposed to go get things done, and they're not getting done. So there's so many basic things that we have that need to be corrected. But when we talk about all the issues that are ailing us with public safety, with police, with education, with business corridors not being living up to their full potential, it all starts with structure. And right now we have no structure. We're one of the few cities in the nation that does not have a city charter. We have no direction. Ask anybody what an alderman's job really is, and you'll get 100 different answers if you ask 100 different people, because there's no form and structure to what our jobs are right now. So just collectively, this is the core of what's going on and what's wrong with Chicago. And all the other problems kind of stem from us lacking real structure in operating our government.
I mean, thanks for jumping on here today with us, too. One of the things you've talked about in that structure, or things of structure that aren't working for the city, is Superintendent Brown. I mean, you've been outspoken saying that if you were elected, he'd be one of the first things you'd change about the city. And you speak to it as a leadership issue. Do you feel that the power held in that office is too vast? Because we hear all the time that the aldermen say, well, I just can't get the resources. I can't get them to my ward. I can't get them to where I need them to be. And you represent very dangerous areas of the city at times. Why is it you think that Brown should go?
Well, let's first say every area in the city has challenges right now. And I think we all are experiencing that. And public safety is real. You know, you cannot go on and talk about numbers year over year. Nobody cares about that. If there's one incident in your neighborhood and it makes you feel have a certain level of anxiety where you're not coming out, that means if you're not coming out, you're not spending money. You're not spending money. The city does not have the revenue it needs to operate. So let's deal with basics. And yes, David Brown, I think, is a personable gentleman. I can't say anything bad personally about him. But structurally, I think that it would be time for a change and get somebody in that superintendent's position that will really have the respect of the rank and file and really would get them to work together with the superintendent and get things done. Police job are to catch bad guys. There's an apprehension unit. They're supposed to go out based on calls, based on service requests, and catch people doing bad things. Let's get the police refocused in their job. That's really what we have to do. I am not a policeman, John and Jeff. I'm not a policeman. I have basic knowledge, but I would rely upon the superintendent of police to do the job effectively, to marshal the troops and make sure that they feel that someone has their back and supports them so that they can do their job effectively. I would not micromanage the police. I would consult with my superintendent and talk about best practices, but I would allow that person to do their job.
One thing I have a feeling that you would not do as mayor, Alderman Sawyer, is that if a police officer were chasing a young man down the alley, the young man had a gun, and turned fire on that police officer. I just don't see, based on the man I know, Roderick Sawyer, that you would be making political hay and screaming about the end of foot chases. You wouldn't be politicizing it in that way as she did. And I think that, to me, is like one of the big differences between Roderick Sawyer and Alderman Sawyer and Mayor Lightfoot, is that your experience in the city, you understand how these departments work, and you came out with this idea that, you know, why aren't trees getting trimmed? Because we're relying on an old, like, feudal aldermanic system that that doesn't exist anymore. And yes. The same thing with foot patrol. So what happened to her, Alderman? What happened to Lori Lightfoot that led her down this path?
Well, John, that's an interesting question. I really wish I can answer that because I don't have as much interaction with the mayor as I've had with the previous administration. And that, good or bad, you know, Rahm, right. You know, will speak very basic to you. And sometimes the conversations get a little, you know, get a little murky, but you understood what he was talking about. And he did engage you in conversation. And at the end of the day, we worked things out and we got things that would benefit the city of Chicago. This administration is a little bit more top down. They're more just letting us know what they're going to do when they get around to it, as opposed to engaging with us and talking about things that we can do that would better everyone in the city of Chicago. And it's frustrating. So I do share that concern, John, and it's, I wish I had an answer to your question about what happened. I don't. There were a lot of promises made at the beginning of the administration. I was actually encouraged. I wanted her to succeed. I wanted her to do well.
Me too.
I thought that would be something that would be different. And we would be finally having a partner, you know, having a real partner in city government. But it was not the case.
I mean, she serves her agenda more than she serves the constituency, it seems, in my opinion, that that's all that is. It's, well, how do I achieve the agenda of what I want to do and not how do I make the average citizen's life better?
Right. And that's always expedient. It may on the short run seem good. But as mayor, you have to make some difficult decisions. You have to make decisions that will benefit the majority of Chicagoans, even if sometimes those decisions will make a few people, and maybe those are the people that are talking loudly, upset. And you have to stand, you know, being tough is standing by your decision, have the courage of your convictions to make decisions that would benefit Chicago. Not, you know, flipping off the president or flipping off a Supreme Court justice or you know, playing the dozens, if you will, with people. That's not tough. That's a bully.
You know, I'd like to, I think our guest, Alderman Roderick Sawyer of the 6th Ward, has put his finger on the issue. And it goes back, and you should all know this if you don't, because Roderick knows it and I do, because I was there and he was watching it. On the week that Harold Washington died, 1987, is when we began to see the city of Chicago crack up into this woke, progressive, Jacobin jabbering. It happened when Harold Washington died, that Tim Evans was the candidate that the left wanted to be mayor. Although they sold him as a reformer, but Tim Evans was basically a coat holder for Claude Holman, the ward boss of the fourth ward. He was a coat holder. I mean, I knew him back then that way, and so did everybody else. And Roderick Sawyer was just a kid, and they were wanting him for Tim Evans for mayor. And they portrayed, in order to do this, they portrayed a man, Gene Sawyer, alderman of the 6th Ward, who had walked with Martin Luther King, who had put his body in front of threats to protect Martin Luther King. This man, they denounced as a race traitor, as an Uncle Tom. It was probably the most sickening thing that I'd ever seen in Chicago up to that point. And I've seen many sickening things, but that started us on a road where common sense people of goodwill, could be denounced by the loudest voices. And those voices were carried by the media. And I was in the media. I saw it all. Saw how it worked. And I don't think we've recovered since then. Alderman Sawyer, Jeff Carlin, I throw it to you guys. Have we recovered? Really?
Well, John, This is the thing. I was in law school when that happened. I was downtown the moment I saw the notification on TV that Harold was taken to the hospital. So I did not leave my dad's side from that point on, including the funeral and up until the day of the special counsel meeting. Mm-hmm. You can see how people turned, and it was frightening almost, and it was definitely discouraging to my father, who was a man who, you know, was proud of his people, was proud of the Sixth Ward, and was happy to support Black causes, which was not that popular back then in the 60s and 70s. As you stated earlier, you know, in the 50s, my dad was out there protecting Dr. King's house with his fraternity right. brother. You know, my dad came in, you know, working his way up from the water department, sewer department, through the Young Democrats and through the Democratic Party, all the while supporting the neighborhood and supporting the area. You know, so it was frustrating to see that people that did not know him that well would say things about him. And what was even more discouraging were the people that were calling my father, because I was the one that answered the phones. If anybody just go back to 1987 and if you made a call to my father, I was the person that answered the phone. I know who called. I know who said that, you know, it had to be him, only to go back on the city council floor and denounce him. So I've seen right. those things. I've witnessed them personally. So I know how it is for someone to turn on you and to, turn their back on you and the work that you had spent your life doing. And it is difficult to see.
And growing
up. It was larger than that, though. It was devastating to you, to your family and to the mayor. But it was also devastating to the city, because then we got into this mode of, you know, that was like the first cancel culture. The first cancel yeah. culture was applied by a Black man against a Black man who at the time when people wanted a Black mayor. And all I kept saying, and Lou Palmer kept saying, was, hey, Gene Sawyer's a Black man. You have a Black mayor. What are you doing to yourselves? But that didn't stop them, and they destroyed it.
Yeah, it was a heart-wrenching period of time, and it was obviously difficult for our family, but my dad kept moving and he kept going and did the right thing. All the things that Harold was working on and attempting to pass, every single one of them had gotten passed under my father's administration. As short as it was, he got all those things, which included lights at Wrigley Field, the first human rights ordinance, labor peace. You know, those things were all, you know, on the agenda. And they were all passed by my father.
How do you think growing up in that time and seeing what things are now? I mean, their activism has always been a kind of a part of you know, American society and our threat of our culture. But seeing it as it is now, what is your take in that respect to how people go about, you know, the cancel culture, which seems to be the ultimate or instant weapon that anybody uses to, you know, get their ends? How do you feel about what you see when you see people trying to pull down statues and do these things in the middle of the night? What is your take on that?
Well, let me say this. First of all, I do agree with a certain level of activism. I was, after this occurred, I was quite an activist on my own, in my own right, back in the late 80s, early 90s, especially after I graduated from law school. I became quite active in the space where now people are getting hundreds of millions of dollars to do. But I was in gang intervention and crime prevention space. And I did that as a volunteer, as a young lawyer, you know, working with gang leaders, trying to get the numbers down. We worked in 94, 95 when the numbers were at its highest, when numbers were hitting 980, 980 plus. We helped to get those numbers down, cut in half. And we were working with former gang leaders and actually sometimes current gang leaders, and getting them to, you know, attempt to direct themselves from criminal and antisocial activity to something more positive. That was something that I worked on tirelessly for several years as an unpaid, you know, volunteer. So I've been involved in that, but it was never to the point where we tried to tear someone else down to build ourselves up. It was always talking about the positive, always talking about what we can do better on ourselves as individuals to make the whole system better. It was not you like this, so we hate you automatically. It was never any of that.
And that's kind of what was the difference. That perspective is interesting because that's really, I mean, I'm before my time, and I'm not an activist at heart, but I see it, and I just see thinking that stuff that you saw in the, when I was a kid in the 90s and 80s, you know, it was activism, like you said, getting involved. We're going down to the YMCA or the Boys and Girls Clubs or getting involved in community
that's
programs.
That's what we were doing, and that's exactly right. What we were doing, Jeff. Yeah.
And now it seems like it's anarchy is the key. I mean, maybe I'm crazy.
And I'll say this to my Italian-American brothers and sisters that may be listening, who I fully support. Let me just say this. I'm not a – and I'll be honest with you. And I've talked to many members of the Italian-American activists that are involved in preserving the culture of Christopher Columbus. I'm going to be honest with you. I was not – I was always one that suspected the accomplishments of Christopher Columbus. But – I respect those individuals who hold that person in high esteem, and I get that it's part of a bigger cultural movement for the Italian Americans. It's not necessarily Christopher Columbus, that person, but the amalgam of all the things that Italian Americans have contributed to this country. And on a personal note, I know that I have people that I hold in high esteem that people may not agree with. Maybe you here, John and Jeff on the call may not agree with. But I think that it would be more worthy of a educational conversation of why I like this certain person or why someone else likes that certain person. You know, it shouldn't be to a point where we're tearing another person's beliefs down. And maybe it should be an educational moment where we can all talk together and find out, you know, what our real interests are and what we're doing to make Chicago better in these cultural differences that we have.
One of the things that makes talking with Roderick Sawyer so interesting and exciting and attractive to me is that after 40 years of covering Chicago politics, I get a sense of how things work just a little bit. And what the alderman said at the outset of this podcast, we can't even get the trees trimmed because we live in a, I'm paraphrasing, we exist in a, Chicago exists in a feudal patronage system where there is no patronage to enforce it.
Yeah.
That's correct. Me is spot on. Spot on, Rod.
Yeah, so and we have to change that system.
How would you change the charter?
I'm sorry?
How would you change the charter?
Well, one, we don't have one. I mean, we haven't had one, you know, we had one in 1837, and we've had some minor revisions over the years, but we have no real structural charter. Other cities, I've learned this, and I want to give a quick shout out to a gentleman and a good guy I've been speaking with over the last several weeks, Joe Ferguson, who's working on this project right now. And it's funny because we didn't always agree when he was here, but I think we had a really healthy respect for each other. To discuss things that were of common interest. And I think he's a great guy working on something in this vein right now. He's the one that told me this. He said most other cities revise their charter every 5 to 10 years. We haven't done it basically at all. And we need a real charter to give the rights and responsibilities of the city of Chicago and our other elected officials that are supposed to be working with us, including the aldermen, and kind of figure out what we're doing and why we're doing it so badly and how do we correct that. So it's a hard reset, as Joe Ferguson called it. And I agree with him 100% on it. And I support him in his endeavors on trying to get this done. And I would be one that would be working with him directly as mayor to do these types of things. I believe in term limits for executive offices. I think it just makes sense. I think that we need to have a council president, if you will. I mean, if we're going to operate correctly on the legislative and an executive branch, You know, why don't we have a council president?
Right.
Why is it that council president, along with the members, choosing committee heads instead of the mayor?
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. That drives me nuts. Seeing the mayor in council and presiding as almost like a king or a, you know, a ruler, that drives me nuts.
It's ineffective. It doesn't
Emperor.
Work. Emperor, yeah.
These are things that a lot of people may not be talking about, and quite honestly, you may not understand because they have not been around. You know, I grew up through patronage. I've seen the great things that can happen in patronage, and I also saw the bad side of patronage and how it can occur. But I will say that patronage created a middle class in Chicago like no other at its heyday. And when it was working greatly. The problem was the disciplinary portions of it were really bad, and they should have just cut out that portion without cutting the entire thing. But I know that's a whole nother subject, and I know it gets a little touchy with people.
Well,
but, I'm not afraid to talk about it.
Good, because this is a Chicago way, and we talk about real stuff. And one of the things that when patronage worked, as maybe some of you might remember, there was a ward on the south side of Chicago called the Six. It was run by Gene Sawyer, who was posthumously, I still owe your father $20 on a.
No, you know what? I still have that $20 bill in my drawer right now that you gave me and signed.
I did. So I paid
my debt.
Right?
I still have it.
What was it? 24?
Cover a bet.
Yeah. Okay.
It was.
Well, that was a bet he made and lost. Yeah. That John made.
Gene Sawyer, his father, was telling me that Roberto Duran would lose against Sugar Ray Leonard.
That's right.
And we both liked watching fights and talking about the fights.
My dad was a big fight.
And I said, "No way.
We were all big fight fans.
No way." And I didn't know that they expanded the ring to like 30 by 60 foot ring and all whatever they did to give Leonard an advantage. But anyway, the point I was trying to make earlier was that we like practical solutions here and practical people. And I'll give you guys another example, okay? Pat Quinn wants to run for mayor, okay? He's talking about it. He's running for mayor.
Yeah.
But you know what? The practical legacy of Pat Quinn was that he gave us Mike Madigan, boss of Illinois, for 45 years. Because of what Pat Quinn did in the cutback amendment, not thinking the way Roderick Sawyer's thinking, soberly, step by step, but just thinking for a press release, a complete upheaval, and that created the four tops. And one of them, the four tops, were Mike Madigan. So I would say, Ted Quinn, your legacy is Boss Madigan. But one thing he did have, Gene, I mean, pardon me, Alderman Sawyer, Roderick, is that Madigan did have his own tree trimming machines that he got. Yeah. I don't know if he paid for them.
I think he paid for them, leveraged
them. But he had his on his ward in his ward yard. So if you needed tree trimming, you didn't have to go down to City Hall and go through the jump through hoops and never have your trees trimmed. Madigan would send crews out that day or the next day. That's how an alderman builds and a committeeman build their ward organizations from that, not from service, not from rhetoric.
But yeah, and that very problem exists now because now it's a have and a have not situation, and that's not what we want in the city of Chicago right now. I believe that we want everybody to get a fair level of service, no matter what their connections may be to. You know, political families or political dynasties.
Oh, Alderman,
one of the
knocks or criticisms of Chicago is the glut of aldermen we have. You know, 50 is a lot. A lot of cities run with fewer. We don't have necessarily the population. But how does that play into this idea of patronage, you know, fixing things or helping fix things?
Well, it plays into the idea of fixing Chicago, because you cannot fix Chicago. Well, you cannot even talk about the number of aldermen yet until we fix the core problem. And the core problem is what do we do and who is responsible for it? Most other cities, their councilmen, their aldermen, whichever you want to call them in individual cities, almost all of them are exclusively legislators. They pass laws. Their staffs are policy staffs, you know, political science majors, planners, things like that. You know, we have to rely upon a service-based model, which is, again, if we're not the people responsible for delivering the service, all we are is complaint takers. Right. You know, we might as well have a sign like Lucy and Linus and have complaints, you know, over our heads, and we just take them in and we do what we can. And we all try to do as you know, work as hard as we can to satisfy the constituent requests that we get every day. But most other local electeds like ours don't do this. They have a public works department. They have something similar to, I guess, what would be R311. But one thing they would not do is refer it back to that city councilman if someone called for a legitimate request, a pothole, a street light, a tree trim, you know, the things that you would ask the city to do to be responsible for. They point back to the individual alderman and say, call them and do it. So, again, until we've worked this out and answer your original question, Jeff, this out and find out what the real rights and responsibilities of individuals are, then we can start discussing whether 50 aldermen are too many or too few, whatever the case may be.
Yeah, interesting.
But if Alderman Sawyer had, under that plan, if Alderman Sawyer had like one day of tree trimming to do, and he had to choose between constituent John Cass and constituent Jeff Carlin, you know, he might have a difficulty until he realized, man, John Cass paid that debt to my dad, so I'm going to give him the tree trimming first. But I mean, that's the point. It puts everybody beholden to their political lord.
Right.
In one way, it's good, but in another way, you can see where
where the wheels come off on it. Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
So we have to get that right first. And that's going to be a process. I was learning again from Joe as he's really diving into this, and he's got some people and he's got a good organization working on it. Learning a lot from what he's doing as far as the procedural aspects of it. We're going to need a lot of state action in order to get these things done. So I'm going to have to rely upon our partners in the state, in the Springfield, state reps and senators, and ultimately the governor to get these things done. But I think once we have that discussion, explain how important this is, I think that we can have some quick resolution. But again, it has to be intentional, and you have to understand what the ramifications are. I think I do.
There are other ramifications we've got to talk about in the short time remaining, and that is who's the CTU, Chicago Teachers Union, backing? Because I've noticed that in this race, they had Dan Buckner for a while, but now I see Sophia King getting a fourth ward alderman, getting a lot of pub, saying what everyone else has been saying, that Superintendent Brown has to go. But she gets a lot of pub for it. And I'm wondering, what's the game? What is the game, guys? Help me out here.
Again, John, you know, I'm getting a little too old to play games right now. I really want to try to help our city be the best it can be. We do have a world-class city. I think it's a wonderful place, but we have some problems. You know, if we're not talking about solving the problems, you know, let's concentrate on that. And that's where I am. I can't speak for anybody else. I can't speak for CTU. I understand that one of their members is going to be looking at getting in the race, and we'll see what happens when that unfolds. But I've spoken with CTU when asked, I did state, you know, the reasons why I think that I can be a viable candidate in this race. I think that I, again, have something to offer based on my experience and just being around and just having a plan on making sure that the city is handing over to the right, you know, in the right direction, and me wanting to pass it off to someone that can take it that much further. So, you know, this is not a legacy builder for me. I'm not trying to be here forever. I want to make sure that the job gets done, and I'm going to do what's necessary to get it done and move on and again, pass it to the next person who can commit to public service and continuing the work that makes Chicago the best city in the world.
Is Chicago the best city in the world now, though? Because I don't know. We've got a mayor. Well, here's the mayor's plan. All the hell that's going on. Let's build a casino. Let me put a $2 billion dome on Soldier Field that nobody wants. And let's have a bunch of NASCAR racers rolling through the loop. Right. I don't know if that's a plan. I don't know if that's a plan, Alderman Sawyer. Yes. Is that a plan?
No. I mean, and I had issues with every single one of those things. The easiest, and I don't know how you, the casino was one of the easiest things we could have done.
Yeah.
And even then, that was done, you know, with a high degree of frustration. The casino conversation obviously has been going on, you know, actually since my father was in office. The casino conversation was back in the 80s where they were designing a casino. So it was a long, long conversation. And there was no real big accolades on getting union involvement. We all knew if the casino was going to be built, it had to be, this is a union town. We knew that. It had to be union participation. That was no big achievement. That was just like, hey, the sky is blue today. unions are going to build a casino. You know, that was a given. That was not a deal maker or break. It was a deal breaker. It was not going to happen without union labor. And so I guess, and then the NASCAR thing was just a head scratcher to me. I just didn't understand that. And obviously, the alderman down there. That were affected have big problems with it, and you know, and I joined them in those concerns.
Yeah. You didn't talk to any of them,
right? Yeah,
you made a decision.
No, did not
to shut down the lakefront for a month. No problem.
Well, I mean, the gas giveaway, the car giveaway, all these things are non-sustainable, and they eat into what we really could be doing to solve the core issues that we have. And John, again, yes, I think Chicago is the greatest city in the world, despite the challenges that we have. Let's just, you know, again, let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. Let's be surgical and remove the problems and continue to make Chicago the best city that it is.
Agreed. But the problem is, and no one knows better than the Sixth Ward, that the 200 or 300,000 African-American black people have left the city of Chicago, many of them middle class, because of the crime that she and the, pardon me, but the Democratic Party refuses to address in meaningful ways. There was a Democratic Party that had moderate people like your father and you and others who had say, but people leave, they vote with their feet.
Well, John.
Rod, I'm out, and so's a lot of your constituents out.
Well, John, I say this, you know, in this race, you know, I am a Chicagoan, and I think almost all Chicagoans want the same thing. You know, they want to feel safe in their environments. They want good schools. They want effective policing. They want vibrant business corridors. You know, they want these basic things so that they can enjoy all the amenities that Chicago has to offer. And if we're not providing those basic services to them, yes, they will leave, particularly those that can afford to leave. So it is a problem that we have to address, but I think it's eminently addressable. But again, it has to have someone that has the intention and determination and to stand on. And I'm going to tell you, the word of the day is going to be in this election cycle is accountability.
Mm.
You know, people have to be accountable for their actions, both all the way around. There have to be consequences if you're doing something wrong. And the consequences vary. You know, they could be instructional. They can be, you know, punishment. They can be, doing things that help people get back into the system and mainline. But You cannot have one without the other. It's a both and approach. You know, I support initiatives for to prevent recidivism. You know, I am for getting people back on, you know, if after they've served their debt to society, get them back on the road to recovery. I support all of those things. Yeah. I also support the punishment. You know, I call it the hot stove theory. You know, when you, if you touch the stove, you get burnt. So, you know, if it happens and you get, you know, you get caught and you're doing something criminal and you're doing something wrong, you have to pay. You have to be accountable to your actions. And then we can talk about how we rehabilitate you, get you back into society and make sure that you don't do those things any longer. But that's again, we need, that's why we need effective policing. That's why we need all the things that we need to have to make these things right. So that means us talking to our partners in the county and partners in the state, making sure we have those kind of somewhat uncomfortable conversations sometime. But you have to have them without, you know, calling people out of their name or doing things that are disrespectful to the other party. Let's work it out. Let's do it what's fair for everyone. But let's have that conversation.
You're going to have that conversation whether they want it or not, because we're coming up to Illinois as the no cash bail state.
Mm-hmm.
That's coming right after the midterm elections, January, it takes effect. I don't know. I'm for bail for all people to have a chance at bail. I don't want to lock away people, Jean Valjean, for stealing a loaf of bread, even though that's not the case in real life. But at the same time, I don't want to release people out into the community who've been accused of murder, arson, other violent crimes, and then they wreak havoc on the community members, and the media ignores it. Black people usually are committing a lot of these terrible crimes, unfortunately, for a lot of reasons. But black people are also the victims of these terrible crimes. And we have to, if we ignore the victims, we're ignoring the city, and then they leave. That's why they go. Am I off base?
No, I totally understand your position. Right? And again, it's something that we always fail to have the uncomfortable conversation. I think, John, we talked about this before in private conversations, but we're always unwilling to have the conversation that may make somebody or some group or some, you know, one uncomfortable. And we need to stop that. Right. We need to have these conversations in order for us to move forward.
Yeah, I like it.
One uncomfortable conversation we will not have is me editing your first column for John Cass News, because I can't wait to see Rod Sawyer lay it out, like the plan for Chicago and how he would affect that plan.
Yeah, I'll be happy, Rod, to do it. And again, this is this is exciting for me because I want to help. That's all I really want to do. I don't. This is not about me gaining name recognition or whatever. This is me wanting to roll up my sleeves and do the work and do what's best for Chicago.
You've seen Chicago at its best and you're seeing it at its worst. And I know what you're about, Rod. That's why you're here.
And I appreciate that, John, always.
Yeah, we got to leave it there, John. We've taken up a lot of the Alderman's time today.
Well, no problem at all.
Thanks, Alderman.
Always happy to talk to John. We always have good conversations.
And then when you see Lori again, tell her she's welcome to write up. I want her to write for John Cass News too. Maybe a recipe for Italian sausage, like a foot long Italian sausage. Sausage with meatballs, I don't know. Or something else. You know, I'm not going to ask you. If I let her people hear this and go to run.
Well, I look forward to the engagement.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Anytime. Thank you.
So for Rod Sawyer, alderman of the 6th Ward, candidate for mayor of Chicago, who's been around, he saw his father savaged by progressives, all these angry white people shaking their fingers in his face. Made me sick. And for Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio, future physics teacher, master of pies, lover of cats, and for me, John Cass, husband, father, Orthodox Christian, editor-in-chief of John Cass News, where you heard it. Everybody can, all the people running for mayor of Chicago are invited to submit an article. Join us again next time, won't you, for another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.